You're listening to The Leonard Lopate Show on AM 820 and 93.9 WNYC.
Camille Pizarro was a founding member of the Impressionists, and he remained an innovative painter throughout his life. Although he's mostly known for his landscapes of the French countryside, as it turns out, he painted more cityscapes than any of the Impressionist artists. A new exhibition at the Jewish Museum, Camille Pizarro, Impressions of City and Country, includes many seldom-seen works from private collections in New York City. It runs through February 3, 2008, and it brings Karen Levitoff, the curator of the show, to my show. Hi.
Hi, nice to be here.
Are there a lot of Pizarros around New York?
There really are. The exhibition is about 50 works drawn primarily from New York area private collections and a few museum loans. And when I started putting together the exhibition, I didn't know exactly what I would find. And I was very pleased to discover that there are some fabulous Pizarros right here. And many of them, like you said, have been rarely seen.
Because they've been in people's living rooms.
They've been in people's living rooms, exactly. And some of them have never been on public view, and some of them haven't been seen ever in this country or not for 50 or 100 years.
But does it cover the full range? Because Pizarro really had an incredibly varied career and tried his hand at a lot of different styles over the years.
The exhibition covers his entire career from when he first arrived in Paris in 1855 all the way up through his death at age 73 in 1903. And it covers all of his ranges of styles from pre-impressionist to full impressionism to neo-impressionist or pointillist style, and then when he returns to an impressionist style later in his life. And it also includes mostly oil paintings, but a few watercolors, prints, and drawings and works on paper.
And when he arrived in Paris, he came from further away than the other impressionists.
That's right. He was born in St. Thomas, which was then part of the Danish West Indies, and he was of Sephardic Jewish background. His parents were originally from Bordeaux, but he grew up his whole life in the Caribbean, came to Paris after going briefly to Venezuela, and remained in Paris from that point on.
There had been a certain amount of scandal attached to his parents' marriage. And a lot of the things that happened in the Caribbean seem to have affected the way he dealt with France.
That's right. His father came to St. Thomas to help with the family dry goods business after his uncle had passed away, and he was there to help his aunt. Eventually, he fell in love with his aunt and wanted to marry her, but the St. Thomas synagogue wouldn't recognize the marriage since they were related by marriage. But many years and several children later, they finally did have their marriage recognized.
And they were kind of wealthy, Jewish, but Pizarro was educated in a Protestant school among the children of former slaves.
That's right. Because of the scandalous nature of his parents' marriage, they sent him to the Protestant school. And I think that his growing up with the children of slaves really affected his outlook. And his early works depict black figures, and later on he depicts the non-bourgeois in France. He relates to the peasants.
Well, Degas also spent some time outside of France in New Orleans.
Right.
Do you think that brought a different sensibility to them?
I do. I think that their experiences affected their work quite strongly, and that Pizarro's growing up in the Caribbean affected his work. He was always interested in landscape, and two of the early works in the show show his early Caribbean landscapes. He painted them in France, but they're of the St. Thomas landscape.
Now, he was very young when he went to Paris, just 12 years old.
Well, he first went there for boarding school when he was a child, and then he returned to St. Thomas and then arrived to live permanently at age 25.
How did his parents react when he said, "I want to be a painter"?
They weren't very happy at all. They wanted him to take over the family business, and when he decided he would be an artist, he basically ran away from home, went to Venezuela first. And then when they realized he was bound and determined, they said, well, okay, as long as you take classes at the École des Beaux-Arts and have an official academic training, which he was not interested in, but he did it in order to gain his parents' support.
And he showed in the salons.
He did. He showed in the salons, which at the time was the only way to become established and to sell your work and to make a living at being an artist. But eventually he broke off and with the other Impressionists showed their work outside of the salons. And he was one of the only artists to completely reject the salons and never show his work or never submit his work again once he had decided that this is what I'm going to do.
Like the other Impressionists, he also went to the countryside.
He did. He was one of the first artists, actually, to venture to the countryside. The railways were newly established outside of Paris. He traveled to paint the landscape, and many of the other Impressionists, such as Cézanne and Monet and later Gauguin, followed him to the countryside to paint with him.
The path is a recurring visual theme in his paintings. Why do you think that is?
It was really interesting. When I started gathering the work for the exhibition, I started looking at them closely and saw this motif of the path that became a point of interest for me. And I think for him, it was perhaps both a compositional element to divide his canvas, but also when I was looking at the paintings, I saw it as a way of thinking about his work and thinking about his ideas of labor. He was very interested in labor, and he depicted oftentimes peasants walking along the path or carrying loads down the path, as well as bourgeois taking strolls. And the path also then can serve as a way of looking at his travels between city and country, which he did frequently.
He had that interest in common with Van Gogh. Did they know each other?
Yes, they did. And Pizarro was an inspiration for Van Gogh as well. He worked more closely with, he mentored really Cézanne and Gauguin, and later was an inspiration to Van Gogh and encouraged him to come out into the country as well.
Although the relationship of Pizarro and Cézanne seems to me to be a rather odd one because their politics was so different. How did Pizarro's political philosophies enter into the way he painted, other than that he painted workers sometimes?
Pizarro was a social progressive, and he was very interested in how workers related to the land. One of the themes that I draw out in the exhibition is the intersection of nature and society, which he's very interested in. And one of the ways he sees this is to depict the worker as integral to the land. He sees the peasants as working in the land, and he himself, when he paints, relates his own painting, the brushstrokes on the canvas, as the same as the peasants plowing in the fields.
Although it doesn't have the same kind of effect that Millet would have, where you almost feel at times like it's a celebration.
He was often compared to Millet, because they were both interested in agrarian themes. But Millet is often seen as a more sentimental kind of artist, and who, you know, really draws out the peasants as in pathos rather than in the way that Pizarro does, which is more almost an objective looking at the land and seeing everything integrated, the fields, the peasants, as well as the industry that existed.
My guest is Karen Levitoff, curator of a new exhibit at the Jewish Museum called Camille Pizarro, Impressions of City and Country, and it runs now through February. The Impressionists were kind of split politically, weren't they? You had a number of conservatives, Degas, Cézanne, Renoir, and then you had people who almost became social radicals. Pizarro, I guess, the most far to the left, pretty much an anarchist.
Right. He was interested in anarchist literature. He read much anarchist literature, subscribed to journals, and contributed prints and woodcuts to them. He was really more of an armchair anarchist, though. He was not a bomb-throwing anarchist, and he was mostly interested in humanitarian and egalitarian society.
Was he affected at all by the anti-Semitism that manifested itself in France during the Dreyfus case?
Yes, he was. By this point, he was already well advanced in years and well established in his career by the late 1890s, and he did write in his letters he kept up an extremely prolific correspondence both with his son and his dealers and friends, and he wrote that he felt that his sales were being affected by the Dreyfus affair and by anti-Semitism, and he felt affected by it, and he also felt then alienated from several of his colleagues and former friends.
Because he'd been really close to Cézanne and to some degree Degas as well, and they were anti-Dreyfusans.
That's right. He worked for 10 years very, very closely with Cézanne and painting side by side, and he collaborated with Prince, with Degas early on as well. They continued to admire each other's work even after they had had personal falling outs.
He and Degas both had an interest in Japanese prints, which were coming to France at that time.
That's right. And almost all the Impressionists looked at Japanese prints and were very interested in the flattened forms and the organic and geometric lines and the flattening out of perspective. He and Degas, as well as Mary Cassatt, were also printmakers themselves, and made work, some of it kind of emulating Japanese prints, but within the themes that they continued to work on themselves.
Now, most of the Impressionists started off with a style and then developed the style, and we understand the late Monet from the early Monet, even though it's quite different. I can say the same about Degas, and pretty much I think all of them. The only real break is Renoir, but even he has a certain kind of consistent line. We don't see that with Pizarro. Suddenly Pizarro, during the post-impressionist period, starts painting pointillist paintings.
That's right. Pizarro was really an innovator, and he was constantly experimenting with his technique and his style. And throughout his career, we can see where he's trying different styles and different techniques. In his mid-50s, when he's finally established as an impressionist painter, he becomes interested in pointillism and starts looking at the works of Seurat and Signac and spending a lot of time with them. They're a generation younger than him, and he starts painting in the pointillist style. His dealer is not very happy about this, but he does continue this for about 5 years, and then after that he does return to his impressionist style.
And he also seems to have returned to the city at a certain point. Now, was the path as important in the cityscapes as it had been in the country landscapes?
It takes a different format in the cityscapes. We have boulevards and we have roads, and we also have winding paths in the gardens of the Louvre or in Kew Gardens in London. But I think it continues to take those same qualities that the path has taken previously, that and it shows the themes of labor and progression and the intersection of nature and society.
Although, to some degree, you see someone like Utrillo coming out of his cityscapes. I guess the dialogue may even be with generation to generation to generation in French art.
That's right. Pizarro was very influential to generations beyond him. He mentored Gauguin, like I said, and Van Gogh and Matisse. He also met towards the end of his life, and they were very interested in his work. And Cézanne actually said, "We are all derived from Pizarro."
Didn't Pizarro also paint Jewish bankers in a negative light?
He did a series of drawings, actually, and they were not meant for public view. He did a series of drawings called the Turpitude Sociale that were intended for his nieces living in London. And they were an expression of his political beliefs, and they were meant to educate his nieces. And in them, he draws bankers. And at the time, the way a banker was portrayed for people to know who it was as a Jewish stereotype. And it's surprising, but it's also very typical of the time period.
But he was a relatively successful artist throughout his lifetime, wasn't he? He wasn't one of the strugglers who...
He did struggle, actually. Up until about 50 years old, he struggled quite a bit, and he was dependent on his parents for financial support well into his 40s. And his wife is always giving him a tough time because they have a large family, and she's always telling him, you know, go out, work harder, sell your paintings. He works very, very hard. He goes to Paris frequently and tries to get his dealer to sell his work, but he's also encouraging his sons to become artists, which they all do, much to his wife's disappointment.
And didn't become as successful. You said that some of these paintings have only been hanging in living rooms until now. What happens after the show closes in February? Do they go back to the living rooms?
They do. They go back to the living rooms.
So this may be our only opportunity to see some of these paintings.
That's right.
My great thanks to Karen Levitoff, the curator of Camille Pizarro, Impressions of City and Country. There's also a catalog of this show at the Jewish Museum with something written by Richard Schiff.
That's right.
About Pizarro's career.
That's right. I have an essay about Pizarro's paths, and Richard Schiff, who's a professor at the University of Texas at Austin, writes an essay called Pizarro's Dirty Paintings.
Thank you so much for being with us.
You're welcome. Thank you.